Hi everyone, and welcome to Double Helix, the podcast where we talk about everything relating to TF. Our topic this time is TF in literature.
We're going to talk about something that is a little bit more of a traditional topic for Transformation fans. Usually people want to talk about the shows they loved or the movies they loved or the books they read or whatever. So today we're going to take an opportunity to talk about Transformation in literature. And we're going to cover hopefully a broad spectrum from talking about Transformation in classical mythology and in canon literature. We're going to talk a little bit about TF in children's literature, which is probably where a lot of us were first exposed to TF, if not through cartoons, then through children's literature. And then we'll move on to TF in more adult books and science fiction, not necessarily adult in the pornographic sense, but adult in that they are primarily geared towards adults. And then we're going to finish off by talking about transformation in tabletop and role-playing games.
Should we introduce ourselves?
Yeah, I'm Angerboda.
I'm ABCD.
I'm Fuego.
And I'm former WCW superstar Sick Boy. I'm Tarion.
Sick Boy was from Trainspotting.
You can tell he's sick because it was so much, his like fake intro was so much less enthusiastic this time.
It was just like, let's do this, let's say this hilarious thing, I guess.
Yeah. Alright, so first, we're going to talk about transformation in mythology and canon literature. So we're kind of trying to run the gamut from like TF in ancient stuff to TF in present day. And because that's such a large scope, we're definitely going to miss things. And there are definitely people who are way more into the stuff than I am. So if we leave something out that is like super important to you, like please don't.
Fuck you.
Okay, more for that.
No, this is great. We record this podcast like once every 4 months, and then the first thing we do is just be like, hey, fuck you, fans.
Okay, so I don't want anyone to feel slighted if we forget your fave. So I know this is a topic people are passionate about because we recently went to Anthrocon, me and Tarion and Fuego, and we went to the TF panel at Anthrocon. And this was one of the topics that, like, everyone wanted to talk about. I always joke that there's three things that people talk about at every TF panel. They want to talk about their favorite horny cartoon, or in this case, their favorite horny book. Or they want to talk about their specific jerk-off fantasy without talking about jerking off or touching their genitals at all.
I feel like, PG no, panel. I think there are totally people who are ace who are into TF.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm not trying to diminish anyone. I'm saying, like,
no, I get what you're saying.
Oftentimes people want to
people
talk about
talk
their,
about
jerk
their
on the
specific thing.
Yeah, or they want to talk about their transformation, the plot of their transformation-related webcomic.
So. Yep. That, so, or sort of ask and answer the question, you know, would you TF into your fursona if you could, and how would that go? Please tell me in detail.
Yeah, describe in detail turning into your fursona, thank you. But, so no, anyway.
Note on FA, hi.
So anyway, the first topic we're going to talk about, like I said, is TF in mythology and TF in canon literature. And because basically we're treating mythological literature as part of the literary canon, kind of, because this is more of a secular examination of this kind of thing. So does anybody else want to talk for a little bit?
I don't know. I'm reading through our notes and I'm disagreeing with some of it right now. So
okay.
Fair enough.
Like the notes start off with usually they teach some kind of lesson, but I don't think that's true in like, especially not in our modern cultural sense. Like normally the lesson that they teach is if Zeus wants to fuck you, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, but there's also, I feel like, especially in Greek mythology, a lot of the times they're a punishment for hubris, right? So you have so many of these myths, like you have like the Gorgons who are transformed for thinking they are more beautiful than the gods. You have like and for shitty reasons, like Arachne. Like let's not pretend that any of this isn't just punishment for being a woman.
But like, oh man, look at all this grain I harvested this year. I'm pretty great. Somebody wants to get turned into a sheep and fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair, I feel like that is Zeus's default response to everything.
Yeah, I'm going to turn you into a thing and then fuck you. But yeah, so a lot of the times I feel like the quote-unquote lesson or fate, like the, you know, the Aesop of all of these things is that you shouldn't, like, think that you're above your station or you'll be pushed down below your station.
That sounds great.
So there's at least a couple examples of that.
Yeah, that's true. I was mostly thinking the myths that Ovid goes over, which are mostly about Zeus trying to fuck people, and not about, like, the more canon stuff, but...
Yeah, no, that's fair. I feel like a lot of the sort of the Greek myths especially has, as Fuego was saying, the thing of, like, you are fated to have a certain role, and sometimes you'll struggle against it, but you'll still end up having that certain role.
Yeah.
And, like, I think a lot of times TF ends up serving that as just sort of like, oh, you are going to be, like, pursued by Zeus and he's going to turn you into a thing because, yeah, that's how Zeus do. Deal with it.
And
like,
if we back off from the horny, a lot of these are, a lot of these are just so stories, right? There are stories that explain, well, why does a spider weave a web? And it's like, well, here's an answer that involves a person, and it's also a moral lesson about not thinking you're the best. And like these, like not getting too wrapped up in your own greatness is kind of a pervasive lesson in pastoral societies where you have to get knuckleheads to like depend on each other and like help other people, because if they don't, everyone will just die.
We should have some more of those stories, like some modern versions, I think.
Well, we're working on them, but they tend to have different morals.
Yeah, well, but I mean, even we use TF for kind of a morality play purpose, right? In a lot of our porn, like, the moral of the story a lot of the times is, like, don't get so hung up on your bullshit, like, maybe just give in and it'll be fine. And, like, there's a sexy aspect to that, but there's also, like... to a greater or lesser extent, a lot of TF fans are struggling with, like, oh, it's weird that I like this thing. Oh, I don't know. And so there's this tension of, like, accepting your sexy stuff and, like, rejecting it. And so the moral of the story in a lot of our things is just, like, accept your sexy stuff, it'll be fine. So we're still kind of using TF for that didactic purpose. We've just injected it with this, like, this other level of, like, erotic association.
That, yeah, and also, I mean, sorry, Terry, you go.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say that a lot of times that in addition to being a classical punishment, it also, in classic literature, we tend to anthropomorphize animal, or we see the animal characteristics that we have in ourselves, and it's kind of a classic theme to pick and choose, like, okay, like, in this instance, a person is acting in an animalistic way because X, Y, or Z. And that also kind of, you know, feeds into those creation myths. You know.
But you're also talking about a time when people weren't really removed from, they weren't as far removed from the beginnings of civilization. They weren't that quote unquote civilized yet. Now I feel like in our culture, you have a lot of lessons about, like, how we're becoming separated from nature and technology and all this other stuff. But, like, then people could see a much more direct parallel between the shepherd who leads the sheep and, you know, the wolf who eats them.
Yeah.
Like, they're both using sheep for different purposes.
The example I was going to bring, and we're still sticking with the classical Greek thing, is that the centaurs are they're supposed to represent humans who have this animal side to them, and showing, like, how barbaric they are.
Yeah.
And, like, showing that those animalistic sides are actually, like, really bad.
Yeah, it's the rejection of the base principles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like the sort of, some of the classical myths, especially the ones around TF, are about sort of exploring this other kind of life and, you know, a sort of change in perspective and what that's like. Especially, I'm thinking about Tiresias, I think. I can't remember. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. Tiresias, yeah. but this old Greek story that is about this sort of old priest dude of Hera that like wanders up on a mountain and sees some snakes fucking and is like, hey, don't do that, and hits snakes with the stick, and then gets turned by Hera into a woman for like 20 years, some long amount of time?
50.
Something?
50.
50 years.
50, yeah, half his life.
Yeah, exactly. And like lives for a very long time as a woman, like has kids as a woman and like lives an entire life and then ends up back on the same mountain and sees snakes fucking again. And according to the version of the story, either like hits them with a stick again, and this time Hera goes, hey, you're all right. Or like doesn't hit them with a stick. And Hera's like, you've learned the lesson, and then gets turned back. But then
after my snake fucking puzzle,
you are not supposed to walk in on some sexual shit in Greek mythology. If you walk in on some sexual shit going down in a grove, you're going to get killed or turned into something. Just don't do it. And just do it. You hear it, turn around and walk the fuck home.
Yeah. But anyway, after that, there's a whole bunch of things of like people asking Tiresias in all the stories, like, hey, you've lived as, you know, a man and a woman, like, what's that like? What are the differences? And the quote that made me think of this, the one that kind of stuck in my head, is someone asking him or them, like, you know, hey, you know, which, you've had sex as a man and as a woman, which one is better? And the response was, if the parts of love's pleasure be counted as 10, thrice three go to women and only one to men. Which is a pretty baller phrase, if nothing else.
Your next story's got to be thrice three goes to women, and then you have to have like a snake dude with three dicks.
Yeah.
Three snake dudes with three dicks.
Ape story, in Ape stories, all of it goes to women, because all the characters are women anyway.
Well, three dicks on three dicked women works too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah! There's three a lot of women options. Grow three dicks each, thrice three go to women. Solved. Abe,
there's just a dude Abe. Who stands in the corner and is like, okay.
I'll which just is be one here. Dick.
Yeah. But anyway, so, it seems like there's a bunch of different things that you're supposed to take away from these, but they're also, like, interesting stories that, you know, I mean, if shit's boring, like, listening to a story about some insane thing happening is probably more interesting than, like, I went out and cut the wheat today and picked the olives and whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, also, I'd imagine all of the shitty stories didn't survive for 2,000 years to come down to us. So,
yes.
Like, story there's got to be some sort of winnowing process there.
Yeah. So do we have mythological examples that aren't Greek?
We've got that time that Loki turned into a mare and got knocked up by a giant horse.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I was going to say there's so much examples in, like, religion, you know, like, it's not in our show notes, but, like, friggin', you know, the big one, Satan, turns into a snake. There's a...
Yeah, that's
the
true.
The part in Revelation. Oh,
it's such a poof TF, though.
Yeah. No, the Jesus turns into everybody's DeviantArt character. It's like, oh, he's got seven horns and seven eyes.
Yeah.
So.
So Jesus turns into Sephiroth, basically.
Well, there's a lot of fantastical, like, TF in classic mythology to show, like, holy shit, this person is incredibly powerful. Like, in, like, Irish myth, like, Cú Chulainn does that. And the way they describe, like, what he turns into when he goes into his battle rage is, like, yeah, it's, like, this insane, like, oh, he has, like, all these eyes and, like, a bunch of really long hands and, like, all this other crazy shit. And, like, then he just goes back to being normal. It's fine.
And he's he's normal, he has all those eyes because he's so beautiful.
Yeah, that whole... And I'm all sure. that mythology. There's also, like, some... there's some, like, horse-related stuff. There's, like, Angus Og with the girl. He, like, falls in love with this girl who then becomes, like, a trout. Or he catches a trout and the trout becomes a girl, I think. And then he spends the rest of his life looking for this girl. And there's a really good poem based on it that is the reason why I know that myth. But, like, so there's a lot of...
Oh, I just remembered another one. The children, the seven children who are turned into swans, and then they end up trapped in the shape of swans because their parents don't do the things they're supposed to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of people turning into swans.
Yeah, I guess people, like... I guess people were like, man, swans are pretty cute, huh? Yeah. What if they was a person?
Yeah, I don't know, unless they're huge. You know?
Yeah.
But we saw a really scary giant swan in England who was, like, swimming with one foot. He was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of, like, just humanity is constantly in flux with nature, right? And you have all this other crap. And it's kind of, it's a way for people to express their, like, deep-seated fears about, well, what happens if I get the thing that I want, but then it turns into something else, or what happens if the thing I've been looking for forever is a lie, or, you know, what happens if my kids, you know, kind of the fears of, like, well, it's a pastoral society, so what if my kids all die? Like, well, I'm not going to do a story about that, but maybe I'll do a story about what if my kids all turn into swans, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's...
As kids are wont to do.
Yeah, but I mean, TF is an element to, like, give us morality kind of feeds into the next section, which is, like, TF in children's literature. Are you guys ready to move on, or do you want to talk more about mythology?
No, I am ready to talk about some Dawn Treader.
Okay. Well, I think Dawn Treader's a good example, because, like, the TF in that story, and, like, anyone who hasn't read this book, like, it's... Like, I really like this whole series, C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, but, like, Dawn Treader is the book that I like the most. Why is it the book that I like the most? Because the asshole kid turns into a dragon and then has to learn, like, not to be an asshole, and, like, it's vaguely horny.
Which is kind of funny, because if, as a dragon, you know, like, he is already, like...
Listen, some of our fans are dragons, let's not...
Oh, that's not nice. You love dragons.
I do love dragons. I'm just kidding.
Shout out to dragons.
Shout out to dragons everywhere, y'all.
Hey, hey, everyone, just imagine dragons.
Our show notes say, under The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, this is basically a porn. And the problem with that statement is that he turns back.
I actually, me and you are very divided on whether it's good to turn back or not.
No,
but, like, Eustace, the whole thing is that, like,
It's all
a morality play about. So for those of you who haven't read it, I'm going to sum it up. So this is, like, it's the fifth book chronologically.
Spoilers.
In the Narnia books. I guess spoilers, but, like, if you haven't read these, like, there's a whole movie based on it at this point.
Is it good?
It's not bad. I don't think it's bad. Like, I think
is it horny?
I think it's good. I don't, there's stuff in this book that's too good to, like, I don't want to reduce it to being horny, because A, it's a children's book, but, like, B, there's, like, genuinely stuff in here about, like, the power of redemption and all this different other stuff. So the plot of the story is basically that two of the Pevensey kids from the first books come back into Narnia. They're going on, like, a sea voyage with their buddy, Prince Caspian, but their asshole cousin also ends up pulled into Narnia with them. And he's, like, a jerk for this whole trip. Like, he's actively hindering them. He's, like, working with the villains. He's just kind of a complete asshole until they get to this island where he gets separated from them, ends up going to sleep on a pile of treasure, puts on a cursed bracelet, turns into a dragon, and then, like, has to kind of come back to them. He can't talk, so he has to explain what happened the best he can. And, like, the only reason that stuff works out for him is because Lucy's very empathic and, like, figures it out. And he ends up helping them as a dragon, like, as best he can, and kind of has basically a face turn and, like, becomes a good person. And then once his, like, period of, like, punishment is over, Aslan appears to him in a dream. Aslan, the lion, like, the personification of Jesus, claws him hard enough to, like, strip off all the dragon stuff and, like, bathes him, i.e. like a baptism, and then, like, he's redeemed. So the whole thing is a Christianity tale, but, like, the whole series of books is a Christianity tale, so that's the reason why I'm kind of hesitant to talk about how horny it is, but, you know.
But at the same time, there's definitely elements of it that when you were first reading it as a kid, or at least in my case, I was always like, huh, Maybe I'm going to reread this section for some reason.
Why is this giving my crotch a headache?
It is definitely a Kimmy Schmidt give my crotch a headache situation.
But like the fact that he's like struggling with his dragon instincts the whole time, he's, you know, having to come to terms with that this is, you know, what he is now.
That he might be stuck like that forever. Yeah.
And he, every now and again, he like lets himself enjoy it and has that, you know. So yeah, there's definitely elements in it, but at the same time, yes, like a lot of like kids literature TFs, I feel like more so than mythological ones, this is very they're very much like teach you a lesson stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And the lesson in this case is don't be a magnificent dick.
No, actually I learned really try to be a dick if you're ever on a boat.
Yeah.
That's what I learned. If you ever go on a boat, be a total asshole. Yeah.
If you ever find an old dragon dead on a pile of gold, like maybe just go to sleep on that gold for some reason.
But yeah, so that's like the, I think that's one of the biggest ones that people always think of, but there's some other ones. I have a bunch of ones on this list that are like important to me, but do you guys have any that aren't on this list?
Let's see. The Witches by Roald Dahl is on your list.
Yeah.
That was a big one. There's one that I'm going to toss into the adult list later on. How about like every single choose your own adventure book?
Yeah.
I would read those motherfuckers cover to cover to look for the transformation ones.
Yeah, there's definitely there's a choose your own adventure R.L. Stine one that's like, you are a werewolf, and if you like get the wrong endings, you turn into a werewolf, and if you get the right ending, yeah, you get through. So,
how about Alice in Wonderland?
Ooh, yeah, Alice in Wonderland definitely has some shit.
There's definitely if we can just hop back to the Choose Your Adventure for a second, because there was one of the sort of like fighting fantasy ones, one of the like really classic original sort of choose your own adventure type ones that were sort of like kind of like a D&D adventure that you just run as yourself with the book. I remember there was one scene that was you go into this kitchen in this like evil castle and you just eat like a snack there, and then after you've eaten them you look down and realize that they're like things called mutant meatballs, and then you like roll dice and that determines what random thing you sort of turn into or random sort of effect happens to you. And because
this explains so much about you.
The fact that it's a, you know, classic choose your own adventure story means that about 50% of the options are just you die in a painful way. And most of the rest are you have some negative impact that's like, oh, one of your legs turns into a snake's tail, but it's not very functional, so you just move slower and have a penalty to everything for like the rest of the game. But even so, that concept was significantly horny. And I don't think this is a story I've told before, but adding to the ledger of reasons why I suspect my brother is into this sort of stuff is because way, way back when we were young, when we used to just do like play adventures, I remember my brother was like, okay, this time we're going to play a thing and it's going to be based off this scene in this book. Everyone rolls some dice and then that's the thing that happens to you and that's what your character is set up like.
Holy
fuck.
Yeah.
Your brother could get more furry, but there you go.
I mean, there's a reason why I need to like preemptively eject him from the internet before before this is discovered.
Oh my god. He's like,
you know, he's gonna be so upset when he finally does discover he's super into TF, and then he listens to our podcast and hears us talking about it.
Never gonna happen. Nope.
All right, so
that's the day A walks into the sea.
Okay, so anyway,
the moral of the there's a moral for all of these. The moral of the choose your own adventure ones is fucking drink every potion you find in a choose your own adventure book.
Yeah.
Well, that and always have your thumb on the previous page, which was the lesson they taught most successfully.
It was frequently like, don't take risks, because usually the riskier the thing you did, the more you were definitely going to die. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I have another one that's didactic. it's actually a Caldecott Medal winner, and it's genuinely like a little kid's book. Like it's the kind of book you would have gotten from Scholastic when you were in like first or second grade. And it's called Hey Al by Arthur Yorinks. And it's, so basically the story is there's this janitor who lives in New York City in this little apartment, and he has a dog that does everything with him. And he's kind of really down on his life. Like he lives in a very, in a crappy place. Like his job's really boring. So one day this giant toucan shows up at his apartment and peeks his head in the window of his bathroom, as one
and,
does.
And serves him Guinness, and then he just gets plastered.
Wait, is that a thing?
Yeah, the toucan, the Guinness toucan, yeah.
Yeah, that may fly more in a European audience, so sorry.
I was going to say Fruit Loops, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, but it doesn't get him Fruit Loops. It takes him to this island where there's all these other birds, and it's like a paradise. Like, everything rules. He doesn't have to go to work. He just eats fruit every day, and him and his dog party with these birds until eventually they start turning into birds and flip out.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, you realize that, like, probably all the birds on this island are just people, and that's, like, you know, a moment of, like, oh, okay. And so they flip out, and they start flying away, and they eventually fly back to New York and, like, fall into the ocean and turn back into people and a dog, a person and a dog, and then they just go back to their life. And the moral of the story is, like, your life is better than you think it is, like, take pleasure in small things, yada, yada, yada. But there's like a, you know, middle section that I probably traced like 16 times.
Yeah.
So.
But what if instead of birds, cat?
Yeah, I was never super into turning into a bird, but like I really need to buy a copy of this fucking book for Diz. But yeah, no. So that was like, and I used to, like, you'd find books like that, and then you would be like, okay, did you guys used to get, I know Abe didn't, but Fuego, did you used to get, like, Scholastic, those, like, catalogs from your school where, like, every week you'd get a different Scholastic catalog, and then you'd look through it and then order whatever?
Yeah.
I definitely looked through those for, like, any prospect of any remotely horny book.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then would be like, Mom, I definitely need this book, but you can never ask me why.
Well, I think at that point, and we've kind of mentioned this before, at that point, I don't think we really knew why, just that we just sort of like maybe shouldn't talk about why.
Fascinating. It's fascinating.
It's weird that the first thing you realize, though, is that it's shameful, right? You don't know why, but you know that it's bad and that you shouldn't talk about it. It's weird how intuitive that is.
Yeah, no, it was different. Like, I remember watching I definitely remember watching like American Werewolf in Paris and then like having it recorded and then like watching it by myself with no one else around and getting to the TF scenes and just being like, I'm gonna watch this frame by frame for some reason, and then just sitting there doing that and be like, this is something I need to do, but just by myself. No one else can be doing this. I don't know why I'm doing this, but no one can know that I am.
That's a dude TFing, too. Is it the scene where he's on the subway?
Oh, no. There was a girl TFing part.
Of course.
I thought there was, but I wasn't. Okay. But the girl TFing part isn't as explicit as the dude TFing part. Because definitely the part on the train is the part I watched over and over. And we've derailed into American Werewolf in Paris. But it is the better of the two movies. Fucking fight me.
I was just going to say, I know there is a ton of people listening to this saying, why don't you talk about London? And to them I say, haven't seen it. Don't want to. Deal with it.
You haven't seen American Werewolf in London, huh?
Nope.
That's funny.
Controversial opinion.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a controversial opinion insofar as, like, even if it's not necessarily your cup of horny, like, special effects were, like, fucking amazing.
For the time, yeah, pretty
practical
good.
Practical effects were amazing.
You know what, though? It's such a fucking downer.
Yeah.
That, like, I haven't rewatched it very many times, even with the horny, because it's just, like, it's such a fucking downer. Which is
I've
weird
never watched the whole thing. I only ever watched the TF scenes. Never
Ginger
in my
Snaps,
life.
also super a fucking doubter, have rewatched it a jillion times. Yeah.
Anyway, because it's horny the whole way. Sorry. Okay.
But I also like how we've progressed. I also like how we've progressed from explicitly saying "fuck you" at the top of the show to just saying "fuck you" to the things that you like now.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway. So well, no, the it was witches. Me, but... Wait. Fuego, I know you were super into the witches. I was always kind of like so-so on it, just because it is such a weird downer ending. In the movie, does he turn back?
No, he turns back, I don't know. Yeah. I read the books. I have never seen the movie. It was past my time.
Oh, you haven't seen the movie?
No, I was older when the movie came out. When did the movie come out?
I remember being really little when I saw the movie, and it was scary as fuck. I don't think I ever thought it was horny. I think I just thought it was really scary, because the way they do the women in that's very scary.
The illustrations in the book are like kind of ridiculous, so they're not terrifying. I thought that book was great, and I fucking loved the ending. I didn't find it to be a downer at all.
Really?
Like, sorry, you're just a fucking mouse now. End of story. Book ends. Boom. Mouse.
Yeah, but, like, the implications that not only is the kid a mouse, but that the kid is going to have the lifespan of a mouse is pretty fucked.
Yeah, but that's, like... he's not just like, oh, the kid's going to have the lifespan of the mouse. He's like, the kid's going to have the same lifespan as the only person in his life that loves him, and he loves.
Yeah.
Like, because his grandmother is with him, and they're going to be together for the rest of their lives. So,
yeah, I guess. It was always such a downer to me, because it's just like...
I think it's one of those semi-downer endings, where it's just like, okay, I can see. It's kind of a downer, but it's like, it's not the worst downer.
Yeah, you know? I guess so.
Now, for me, I'm always much rather have it be like, you're stuck. I always like a you're stuck ending.
Yeah, legitimate. Always.
And if nothing else, that's really rare to have in, like, a mainstream thing, that they are just like, no, you're stuck, deal with it.
Well, yeah. Doll's always been kind of that, yeah.
You don't tend to have as much of that, like, and at the end of the story, you're still a cow, deal with it.
I think that happens in adult books a lot, but I think that people generally think that's too scary or bad of an ending for kids to deal with.
That's why Roald Dahl is the man.
Really notable for having adult scary endings.
He did not give a fuck. He was just, he did not insult kids' intelligence at all.
Yeah.
Like, people, like, if you read, like, the Willy Wonka book, like, it's funny because, like, we talk about, like, the morality stuff. Willy Wonka is really the morality.
Is a morality book,
like,
yeah.
And it's just like, oh, I'm going to turn into a blueberry.
It has a blueberry TF.
Yeah.
Oh, and a shrinking. Mike TV gets shrunk.
I read those books. That was never a thing when I read those books that I thought that was interesting. And even the movie, I don't care about turning into a blueberry, but I understand that
there are people out there who totally find that, like, super awesome, and that's their thing.
But I think the people who are into the blueberry stuff, I've only ever seen it explicitly as a reference to the movie.
I feel like that scene in the sort of the book in the movie is a certain kind of TF person's pleasure island. Like,
yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Some people have the donkeys on Pleasure Island. Some people have the blueberry scene from Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Why did we not put Pinocchio on this list?
Because literature. Like, the way most people are familiar with literature with Pinocchio is as a movie.
I guess that's fair.
I mean, if not as the Disney movie, there's like tons of other adaptations of it as a movie. I've never read it. One I didn't put on here is, I read a book of, like, the Nutcracker when I was a kid, and there was definitely some interesting stuff with, like, the Rat King, and also that, like, somebody was, like, a puppet. I don't know, that was whatever.
Yeah, no, I definitely remember there's a lot of stories kind of like that, that have things where, like, those sort of, like, nursery rhyme type things, or sort of, like, Grimm's fairy tales where, you know... There's always, like, a little less TF than you... They're, like, quite close to TF. It's always, like, you know, oh, maybe this thing is going to be more hot than it is. Like, maybe the big bad wolf is going to be a person or something. Or, you know, maybe the little mermaid is going to... Like, you know, someone will turn into a mermaid or something like that. And it's always just not quite there. But there's definitely enough suggestions that I was always like, maybe, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like drawn to that kind of stuff just for the promise that there could be something else, and then when there's not, then you end up just spinning it out in that direction in your head anyway.
And that's how I started making my own porn.
Yeah, but that's like the proto version of like fantasies, right? Where you read something or you watch something, and you're like, it should have gone in this direction.
You know what I just realized?
Books like that, which is next on the list. But what did you realize?
Some of my first proto TF fantasies were framed as Star Trek away missions gone horribly right.
Like, that's awesome. I'm thrilled to learn that.
I never really put that together in my head until now, but I remember that being like, oh, what if you know, what if they or we go to this sort of planet and this sort of thing happens?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be weird? Wouldn't that be weird and kind of great?
Wouldn't it be weird if you ended up as an alien dinosaur? I don't know.
And I definitely remember, again, this is slightly off topic, but that whole wouldn't it be weird thing, I definitely remember talking to friends of mine at school about, like, hey guys, have you seen this latest Bjork music video? It's someone like, she's like singing, but she's turning back into a bear like over and over again for some reason. I don't know, it seemed pretty cool. Have you guys heard of it? Do you guys know where I can watch it again?
I really like Icelandic music, you guys!
Man, fucking being a TF fetishist pre-YouTube was rough.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But I went to the library so goddamn often.
I took out so many like books about werewolves from the library, and like werewolves aren't even my horny thing anymore.
Yeah, me too. I photocopied all of them. I had like a scrapbook of fucking every reference of the entire library near my house.
You have a proto like horny werewolf scrapbook that you photocopied from the library. That's like charmingly early 90s, late 80s.
Yeah, it was like,
I feel
late 80s.
Kind of like the jaded TF fans, like, entree point, right? It's just like, I remember when all we fucking had was werewolves. All we fucking had was werewolves. Now you kids are spoiled.
Now you kids are fucking snake babes all over the place.
Yeah. But I think it's funny that a lot of what we've ended up talking about here are, like, childhood experiences. And yeah, we're talking about childhood literature now, but, like, a lot of the formative TF experiences people had were through lit before you realize that, like, oh, I don't actually want to, like, read stories where this happens. I want to read pornography where this happens.
But yeah, but
obviously,
like, yeah,
people still want to read stories where it happens, even as an adult, and we'll get there. Like, I still want to read stories with TF in them, even if they're not, like, my super most horny thing, because I think it's interesting.
Fascinating.
I think it's fascinating and interesting in a non-genital related context.
I don't understand what you just said.
Speaking of scholastic books and getting stuff out from the library, should we go to the topic that we've been dancing around and talk about Animorphs?
Goosebumps and Animorphs, yeah. I feel like those kind of occupy the same, although Animorphs is much more fucking depressing.
I have never read an Animorphs book.
Really? Which
never
is
in my life.
Because, like, a central point of, like, the first 10 books is somebody getting trapped as an animal.
What? What years did they come out is the question, because I don't think they existed when I was, like...
So you're, like, probably 3 or 4 years too old for them, because they started to be a thing when I was in about fifth grade, and I remember reading them and, like, probably subconsciously, the thing that got me to stop reading them was, like, the shame of knowing that I was only reading them for the horny, like, subconsciously.
Published June 1996, so I was in high school. That's why I never read them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I remember reading them and being like, these are below my reading level. I should stop reading them and just read grown-up books. And that was, like, when I started reading, like, Tolkien and, like, other stuff instead of Animorphs. Like,
I don't know. I remember I would see the covers of them in the library and always be like, but I also knew that I couldn't. Like, if I took it out from the library, I was like, no, people will know. I can't get out this book of, like...
You would die from shame and also combust.
Yeah, exactly. But I still super wanted to, like, know about them. So I would, like, look at them when I was in the library and, like, read the backs and be like,
Well, the first cover is a kid turning into an iguana.
Yep. But I would never, like, I never took them out, I never read them. And I think possibly What would have done it for me in terms of making me not want to read it is combining the sort of weird, vaguely shameful horniness with just everything that happens to the main characters all the time is terrible, and they all have really such bad. Terrible lives that it would
it
make me go...
It is a crap sack future.
Yeah, it would make me go like, oh, this is just making me feel bad from, like, multiple directions.
It's actually interesting that, like, I feel like Animorphs kind of presaged the explosion of dystopian sci-fi futurism in kids' books, right?
Yeah, yeah, for kids, like, especially, yeah.
Yeah, because Animorphs kind of, for those of you who haven't read it, it takes place during the period of, like, the future going bad. Like, instead of where a lot of teen fiction now focuses on, like, after the bomb and after bad things have happened, Animorphs really took place when everything was going south, and, like, what happens to the characters who are teenagers in those books is rough.
Yeah, they're, like, 14 to begin with.
Yeah, and, like, have to kill people.
Yeah, they are in the middle of a secret alien invasion that's, like, very Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing, and they are the only ones who know that it's happening, and they have to save the world, and it's very explicitly laid out just how badly the world is in peril, and yeah. They're the only ones that can do it. And also the TF in those books. The reason why I know so much about it, by the way, is because I've been listening to a podcast lately. The TF in it is very much leans into body horror. So they're all like, you know, oh, my arm snapped and, like, claws shot out from my face and, like, my teeth, like, spun outwards and my dick fell off.
Skin ripping.
There is explicitly a character in the main crew who has a special talent that means that she can make her TFs really beautiful. Like, she has, like, the, and it's Cassie. She has the ability to, like, make everything not as bad and not as body horror-y, and that's like the good aliens in those books are the Andalites, and that's like a that's an Andalite, like, a prized trait that they have where they can like certain people are just really good at TFing, and she's one of those.
Oh,
people.
Guys, check it out, like, I'm a swan now. It's great. That's fucking great, Cassie. I'm a fucking stink bug right now. My fucking face fell off. But good for you, Cassie.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. But yeah, she's also one of the characters that is, like, fucked up the least by what happens. Like, it's an interesting book. I mean, it's interesting for a ton of reasons. One of them is that the Blood Knight ends up being a girl, which is really rare in teen fiction, where, like,
what's a Blood Knight?
A Blood Knight's like a, it's a TV Tropes character of, like, it's the Vegeta, the, like, person who's like, I'm gonna kill everybody, my honor is really important. Like,
so much honor.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's kind of interesting. But yeah, they eventually got too dark for me to read. They were too much of a bummer. I think I dropped out around when the other kid got powers and was a dick, and I think they end up, spoiler for a book that's like 20 years old, having to kill him. And I think
this whole
Rachel
series
kills
is very
him.
Bad end, huh?
Oh yeah, it's end of the book. The end of the series is explicitly bad end for, like, most of the characters. So it's definitely an interesting thing. But Goosebumps.
Let's get out of that Goosebumps.
Yeah, Goosebumps was a little before Animorphs. Like, they came out when I was younger, and they weren't always super bad end. Although a lot of times they would be like, the end, or is it? They almost always have those.
And then
kind of endings.
Something else jumps out from the shadows, boom, 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 kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But The Werewolf of Fever Swamp, I definitely read until I destroyed it. There's a ton of the early ones. There's also ones that end with, like, TFs that have nothing to do with the rest of the book, so be careful what you wish for. Ends with the main character turning into a bird for, like, no reason. Just as, like, a weird, shocking ending. That's like, not presaged. So R.L. Stein, like, obviously a lot of these books are ghostwritten, but the R.L. Stein name is on another series of books called Fear Street, which are supposed to be more, like, grown-up versions of the books, and there's, like, some werewolf ones that are interesting. There's a werecat one that I fucking, like, was like, holy shit, this is my jam.
I mean, like, legit.
It was very good.
No, I remember,
those are fucking gold.
I remember there was a Goosebumps one that was kind of disappointing, but it was interesting, where a kid turns into a bee.
Why I'm Afraid of Bees.
Yeah. And, like, the whole time you're kind of thinking it's going to end, like, bad end, like, the kid's going to get, like, squashed or something like that, but it's kind of a nothing burger, where he ends up just turning back to normal, but, like...
They usually don't have super bad ends.
No,
even
not
the,
always.
Even the end of Be Careful What You Wish For, like, she's happy to be a bird, nice. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah. What was the one with the mask?
Oh, Haunted Mask.
Haunted Mask, yeah.
That one's interesting because it's a lot of mental shit, right? Like, the kid puts on the mask and then, like, starts behaving more and more like the monster.
Yeah, it's like super, like, Venom from Spider-Man sort of a
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, shout out to Swatcher because...
I was just about to say, the book that launched 1,000 Swatches.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely.
Oh, hey, you just got back to Cygnus, too.
Oh, yeah.
Helen's dad turns into a swan.
Yeah.
Legit.
But yeah, so I think we rounded up kids stuff pretty well. So do you guys want to talk about grown-up stuff?
Yeah, let's talk about grown-up stuff.
Well, the first one we have on the list is The Anti-Horny, and that's The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka.
Ready?
Thanks to Franz Kafka! Kafka! but yeah, like, this book, like, I read The Metamorphosis, and, like, there's no horny in it. It's
nope.
just incredibly
not there.
Sad.
If you just, like, that deep philosophical existential dread, you're going to get off to
the... It is also the most explicitly poof TF in history, because the TF happens
before
the story before begins.
Before the story. But...
Yeah, so there's no TF in the story.
As a framing device, you wake up and something is changed is a really good framing device, but you wake up and are a giant bug is not horny.
No.
Well, not that kind of bug,
they just lay any eggs is really the problem with the book, I think.
You wake up and you're a giant bug and your family hates you, and surprise, they've always hated you, and now you can't go to work, so you have no worth to anyone, and they pelt you with garbage and are terrified of you, and your existence is destroying them.
And
then you die at the end.
Allergic to apples in some way for some reason. But
well, it's like that. That's like a DJ's name, I think, right?
What?
That whole book is like a DJ's name, like your DJ name. Like DJ Your Greatest Fear.
Oh, yeah. Because it is. Well, because it's about, like, your only use to other people is, like, you being able to work, and, like, as soon as you are an inconvenience to them, their, like, true feelings about you will come out. Yeah, that's some, like, deeply depressed shit.
Yep.
So the only tangentially horny thing about The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka, and I told the story before, not on this podcast, I believe, is that in high school, we had to read The Metamorphosis, and then one of my assignments in English was to write a story about what if you turn into an animal, and I definitely wrote a story about getting kidnapped and put in a tank and being turned into, like, a tiger person, and I got 100, and not 100, but a really good grade, and my teacher was like, this is very well thought out. Clearly you spent a lot of time considering this. And I was like, so ashamed. Yeah.
Hey, family,
how red did you get?
We need to move now.
If I wouldn't have been a senior in high school, I would have fully packed my bags and moved away. I don't have that story anymore, but I kind of wish I did.
You've worked your entire life since just recreating it over and over and over again.
Yeah. It was like, I definitely remember thinking, like, fuck it, this is the wankiest thing I could write, but I'm gonna have fun with it, so I'm just gonna lean in and write this dumb thing. And it was like one of the first times that I really just let myself do that. And, like, I'm sure in the end that was a good thing.
And you were also helped out by that was explicitly the assignment. It wasn't like, imagine yourself in a story of your choosing. And it was like, no, imagine yourself in this story, but in sort of whatever way you want. And it's like,
to be fair,
all right.
I kind of deked the assignment because I didn't wake up as an animal. I woke up as like an animal human hybrid in a sci-fi future, which is exactly my jerk off, but whatever.
Oh man, our teacher, when I was a senior in high school, our teacher required us to write what you did this weekend. You're going to write a story about what you did this weekend. And what I had done that weekend was, like, I had gone off to a college that my friend went to. The teacher did not know that I was, like, mostly transitioned, not in school. So, like, I was, like, totally transitioned when I was not in school. And so I had gone off and, like, on a double date with this friend of mine as a girl. And so I was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to write down what I did this weekend. And I did, and I passed it in, and the teacher didn't say shit to me for the rest of the year.
Wow. That's some deep shit. I think he was like...
Oh, she was like, you know, this. You want me to write it. I'm going to write it. Done. Let's do this.
Yeah. Well, I think mine was less a deliberate fuck you and more like a, God, I hope they don't realize that this is my secret point. But yeah, so Franz Kafka is the anti-boner. We also have The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells on here, which is kind of a TF.
I think a lot of sci-fi.
Yeah.
In general.
There's definitely, like, a lot of stuff, like, so The Invisible Man is kind of like a human augmentation story, right? So later on in sci-fi, you have a lot of, like, cyborgs and kind of that kind of stuff where...
It's also the thing with The Invisible Man is it's about, like, okay, if you changed, what would you do with it? Like, how would that affect your day-to-day if you are now different from everyone else? And in that case, it's just different by being invisible. But it's still the majority of the book is a study on post-TF and this particular thing of, okay, your TF is that you're invisible, which is not a horny TF, but from that sort of drilling into that aspect of it. Probably the better one to think about that sort of stuff on the list, though, is the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which is...
Before we do that, watch me transform into Neil deGrasse Tyson.
The Invisible Man wouldn't actually work because the light refracting into his eyes wouldn't be anything. So, theoretically, the Invisible Man would just be blind.
That was pretty good. But Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde...
Yeah, how would you see if you were invisible? Good one, Terry.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably a legit point.
Terry stopped the podcast.
To turn into Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Invisibility is impossible. Terry!
I feel, given that H.G. Wells also wrote The Time Machine, I don't think he was super concerned on, like, well, this works.
It's not really hard sci-fi. But anyway, so The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So, yeah.
Isn't it kind of another morality? Aren't we going back to that with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, though?
It is a morality thing, but also, like, aside from the message it's trying to get across, it's very explicitly this dude is TFing into this other thing, and the whole problem of the story is that he can't stop. It's something that at first it's he wants to do it because it grants him this release and he really enjoys it. And so he overdoes it on TFing and then he finds it starts happening uncontrollably. And then
this is good. That's good. Nice. Good work, Abe.
And then he finds that he can't stop it happening. Like, the mixture that he used to originally make the potion, it had some impurity in it that made it work. But because it was just a random impurity, he can't replicate it. So he starts running out of the mixture that he uses to stop that, you know, to transform.
Do I need to read this book?
More and more in the transformed Mr. Hyde state.
That sounds amazing.
Well, yeah, no, the way that it is that Mr. Hyde is just this big sort of, like, brutish ogre and who just, like, goes around and kills people because, he just completely, like, is like, fuck you, I'll break your spine if I want, whatever the fuck.
So what you're saying, in essence...
It's like id versus superego.
No, what I was going to say is that, in essence, this is the very first Bara TF.
Exactly. Well, he's also very, like, Mr. Hyde is also very explicitly incredibly ugly, because it's that old-fashioned science sense of, like, oh, we can just distill all the negative parts of a personality and, you know, lump them into one person type, and then that is that person, the Mr. Hyde, and then the idea is that he can sort of separate the two out or something, but he finds it really sort of liberating to just to be like, oh man, I'm gonna live it up as this big fucking... brute thing, but it ends badly.
Yeah, well, there's definitely, like, there's a nugget of horniness in there that, like, we've used in porn a million times. Like, that's, I mean, what is all the black cat stuff if not for horny Dr. Jekyll. You know what I mean?
But it's that sort of thing of having that mind aspect to it, and that sort of like release and then sort of going too far kind of thing that was...
Yeah, that's definitely really good.
Going too far.
But yeah, so here's a random one that was my, as like a mid-teenager, my like super horny was Shadowfires by Dean Koontz, which Koontz is like
I totally didn't just buy that on Kindle after reading the description. we're talking right now.
I can't guarantee that it'll be super horny.
Your mileage may vary.
But like the ending, definitely there are some aspects of that. Like, but yeah, Koontz is he's like very hit or miss. Like he's kind of weird. He wrote a ton of stuff that you might have read, like a lot of which involves like super intelligent dogs, because he's super into dogs. But he
Me too.
So of course so not super intelligent dogs.
No. Dumb dogs. Yeah, is there a dumb dog book?
But the plot of Shadowfires is that so there's an antagonist and he's slowly devolving into a weird lizard bug hybrid because he created the stuff that was supposed to stop him from dying, but then he dies and comes back to life and just like starts devolving. So the idea is that whatever he invented gives him like eternal life, but it's also like reprogramming him into like this weird like thing that's left, like this leftover kind of thing that's in our DNA, and not something that humans ever were in the past, but just like all of the weird shit we have left in our DNA from like having a common ancestor with amphibians or insects or whatever. He just starts having all these weird like side effects, and by the end of the book,
Tyson here. Did you know that 90% of your DNA is the same as that of banana?
Okay, thanks, Neil.
Also, did you know that I sound like a Muppet for some reason? Waka waka waka.
I'm really glad that Neil deGrasse Tyson is a guest on this episode.
Also, and now here's Fozzie Bear.
We're gonna get sued.
It's like you're worried about Fozzie Bear.
Okay, so for Shadowfires, the antagonist is pursuing the protagonist, who is his ex-girlfriend or ex-wife, maybe. I don't remember. It's, like, loose. But by the end of the book, he's chasing her basically through the Nevada desert and is just this crazy alien thing, and she's just trying to get away from him. And it's pretty implied that he can't control himself anymore or, like, is only working on, like, his hindbrain. So it's... There's definitely, like, it's not, there's a way to take it that's horny, and it's not taken in that direction. I've definitely made this a new porn in my head, which I'm sure is not what Dean Koontz wants, because he's, I think, pretty religious. The next one I put on the list is, while we're talking about weird shit, there's this guy, Carlton Mellick III, and he's an author in this genre called bizarro fiction.
Think
and
Chuck Tingle.
Like, Chuck Tingle, but, like, he's serious about it.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, and a lot of his stuff involves weird, like, monstrous TF, but the one that I've read, I've read a bunch of them, but the one that is clearly in people's wheelhouses is Warrior Wolf Women of the Wasteland. Which is, like, the plot's basically set, and I don't want to spoil anything because people might want to read it. It's really short, but it's also really fucking out there, and there's a ton, like, his stuff is deliberately ridiculous. Like, the setup for this story is that humanity has collapsed except for city-states that are run by McDonald's.
Okay.
So, like, the police are all Fry Guys, and they're, like, genetically engineered supermen who are, like, it's whatever. But
Mayor McCheese is a character, isn't he? Or is it...
The Hamburglar is a character, and he's, like, a really deformed super ninja.
Of course.
Everyone in these books is a really deformed super ninja. But, like, one of the premises of the book is that some girls, if they have sex, start turning into werewolf girls. Like, not werewolves in the sense of, like, that they turn back. Like, every time they have sex, they turn more and more and more into wolves. So, like, that's...
Sounds amazing.
That's pretty directly a porn, right? And so they have these, like, lesbian conclaves out in the wilderness where they'll, like, either fuck each other or watch each other fuck a captive man and then ceremonially turn more into a wolf and then usually eat the dude. So, like, it's not, like, 10,000% horny, but there's definitely something going on there. There's some decent elements to it.
It's definitely the inspiration type story, yeah.
Yeah, there's also illustrations in it, which are really bad, because I'm pretty sure Melek drew them himself, so, like, but they at least give you an idea for what the characters look like. But, yeah, they're, like, it's, like, kind of baby's first furry porn. It's really weird. Yeah. But there, other examples of this guy's work are, like, there's a story where humans are fighting with toys in a dystopian future, and a girl has to get surgically altered to be a plush animal. There's, like, a story where there's a dystopian future where everyone has only a certain amount of calories a day, so a girl gets an exercise bike on the black market, and it's a secretly, like, surgically altered billionaire whose fetish is being ridden like an exercise bike. Like, it's just look.
How are we not friends with Carlton Mellon?
I don't know. Cause he has mutton chops, and I can't be friends with someone who has mutton chops.
He is listening to this right now and crying cause you just said that.
Aw, that's not fair. I bought a bunch of his books. He should buy my stuff.
Just shave off your mutton chops and we'll be your friend, dude.
Yeah. But anyway.
That's it. That's all you gotta do.
Fuego, did you add the magicians?
I did add the magicians.
In the show notes, it just says the magicians! Exclamation point! Exclamation
bang,
point!
Bang! Bang! Bang!
Like the the aristocrats shit kind of ending.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly like that. So there's some problematic shit in those books that I was not too terribly thrilled with, but as a whole, I really liked all three of them. And there's a lot of TF in a series
for sci-fi.
Yeah, but I hate it when people turn books I like into series. That's apparently, because every time I try to watch one, I'm like, why did you change that thing that made it good into something shitty?
I'm not familiar with the Magicians. Like,
so the Magicians is like if Harry Potter were real, but instead of being elementary school, it's college.
Okay.
But it's real. So it's like when you went to college, the shit that you did in college, but if you were magical.
Okay.
Which is like a lot of magical fucking.
Oh, I see. And also messing with each other. Magical working at Quiznos, but continue.
Well, yeah, okay, but they don't have to have normal muggle jobs because they are
magical. So wait, does that mean that they have like the scene where Hermione turns into a cat person, but with fucking?
Yes, they do.
All right.
You've already...
yes, they do.
On to amazon.co.uk.
Spoilers! Spoilers! Yes, they do. It's not cats, but yes, they totally do.
What is it?
Yeah, there's a book. I think it's Arctic Foxes.
Okay, well...
It's foxes.
Yeah, that's... I could work with that.
It's really good.
He's been desperate for that Hermione nut his entire life.
If anybody is wondering, yes, we do record the podcast completely naked.
Yeah. Shut up, Terry.
like a sick child.
There are TFs, if I recall correctly, in all three of the books. I think the first book is the best out of all of them, but they're pretty decent. I read all three, so
that's cool.
Yeah, I liked the first one a lot.
A lot. So it's very dog-eared.
No, I just read. I read the whole freaking book when I reread it. It's not even like I'm rereading certain sections. It's good.
Yeah, there's. I didn't put it on the list, but the Belgariad by David Eddings has big chunks where the main character turns into a wolf. His family can all turn into wolves. Like, his wife, his grandfather's wife straight up is a wolf, which is kind of a spoiler, I guess, who just figures out how to turn into a person because she's awesome. There's a bunch of shit like that.
I was going to say, there's one that is not on the show notes that I can't believe you didn't put on here.
Yeah.
And it was, not the whole series, but at least part of it, was Angua from...
Oh, yeah.
Discworld. You're right. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, that was super something that I kept hanging out for, like, could this be more horny, though? Like, can we lean on to the horniness? That was definitely, like, the first Discworld book that I... Well, the first one I read was Color of Magic, but the first one I came back to and read was Men at Arms, because I was like, she's a werewolf, you say?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But she... There's so... I was on the TV Tropes Wiki in preparation for this episode, and I was looking up, body horror transformations, and I remembered, and I didn't remember this at the time, before I read this, that Angua explicitly says that her transformation is, like, really, really gross, and she never wants Carrot to see it, and that's, like, a plot point in the books that she, like, she can't deal with the idea that he would see her turn into a wolf or turn back, and it's explicitly mentioned that the only person who ever sees her transform, like, goes kind of nuts from it.
Yeah, I definitely remember that, the line being that, like, Angua in either form is definitely easier on the eyes, but in between is not great. And so he always turns around when there's, like, some robbers or something that, like, see it happen, and they just, like, run off and run onto a boat and then, like, go as far away as physically possible. So, yeah, that definitely limited the horny there.
But I think, like, there's a lot of whole undertones of, like, that's really kind of more soft parts of it where they talk about, like, her being a dog and, like, kind of being a little bit more on the fluffy side of it.
Yeah, a whole plot point of one of the books is that, and I won't ruin it because it's an amazing moment, but that werewolves are just dogs because the intersection of wolf and man is just a dog.
Mm-mm. But it was one of the first examples that I can remember from, like, good literature that was having, like, you know, someone being a werewolf wasn't just, like, an end game of, like, oh, now they're just this snarling monster forever. It was, like, something that you could just be as a, like, side thing and just be like, oh yeah, that's who I am, but it doesn't, like, it's not it. I'm not just some snarling monster the entire time. I can still have a sort of that can be a very main part of my life, but it doesn't mean that I have to just not be able to talk and not have relationships and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I think that, like, for Pratchett, that probably just wasn't interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, having the idea of, like, a policeman that is also the canine unit is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and that was kind of his whole jam the whole time as well, of, like, you know, what if, like, trolls and orcs and goblins and stuff were all just people and trying to just, like, live their lives, even if they were these sort of classic monsters.
Yeah, but, so that kind of, talking about Pratchett and fantasy kind of brings us into tabletop, so do you want to start on that? Because that's really your jam.
That is kind of my jam, yeah. Like, we've got a couple of game systems written down in the show notes that are various things. Like, pretty much all of them are ones that I've never actually played, which is a good move on my part.
Hey, you're playing a lizard man in D&D now, finally.
I am, finally, yep. And as far as the party knows, he was always a lizard man. But so there's Shadowrun, which is set in, like, a near future cyberpunk world. But the thing that's interesting about that in a TF sense is the fact that that world explicitly had, like, an event that swept over the world called, like, the Awakening or something, where just, like, a bunch of people just turned into stuff. So, like, turned into various fantasy races.
Yes, please.
So people just, like, randomly, like, turned into orcs or turned into, like, elves or dwarves or, you know, a lot of it isn't super hot.
Dogs? But did they turn into dogs?
Well, no, that's the thing. It's not super hot in that way, but it has that element of, like, you know, oh, this big thing sweeps out across large swaths of the world and changes people, but not so much that it's, like, terrifying, but just enough that it is a big deal.
A big deal, yeah.
It's not like everyone changes into, like, rock or something that's just like, well, that's the end of your life, but it's you know, people change, you know, in these ways that still let them carry on, but they are now fundamentally different.
I think the apocalypse TF event, I don't mean to interrupt you, is more interesting when not everyone changes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm always super tired of, like, people whose deal is the apocalypse level event where every woman on the earth becomes a crying pig.
That's what, like, I was avoiding saying, yeah.
When are men going to become crying pigs? Why not men?
Next second apocalypse.
But, like, part of the thing that interests me about being in the human world and turning into a thing is that other people didn't. Then there is some consequence. Like, if everybody on the planet turned into a weird thing, it would be interesting to see how people coped with it, but it wouldn't be, like, super embarrassing to be, like, a duck or whatever. But yeah, so I think I think the world TF level event is more interesting if not everyone turns into a thing.
That yeah, and that thesis. That game system has that in it, and it also has like the mutability of the player character as like a fundamental thing. Like you can sort of get upgrades, you can change yourself, you can be changed. But it's also the sort of thing where it never went quite in a horny direction, at least not in anything of it that I ever read. It was always just like, oh, now you have like a gun arm, or now you're like green and shorter. And it was always just like, this is dumb. I don't really super want to play it. And also, if I did, I would be sitting around a table with a bunch of my friends talking about how horny it was that we were turning into things, except very much not talking about that, but thinking about it so much. And I need to...
Oh, man, it'd be like a TF panel.
Yeah. Okay, so there's also an RPG that's a tabletop RPG that's set in the TMNT universe, and it's very much the universe of the comic books.
We should specify for anyone who doesn't make the link instinctively: Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah,
Hero Turtles in the UK.
Teenage yes. Mutant Hero Turtles. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's not really a lot horny in it. You,
I would disagree. Like the whole idea is like you pick what animal you want to be.
But you're always explicitly an ascended animal and yeah. never a person that turned into an animal.
Yeah, it's not as hot.
In the actual Turtles comics, the idea of people turning into stuff wasn't as much of a thing. It was always, like, ascended animals.
But if you watch the cartoon, that was what happened in the cartoon.
Yeah.
So you just change the fucking rules.
Yeah.
You play house rules.
Yeah, so I wrote that. You could house rule it so that you turn and you transform human. The rule book was written in the 80s. I'm sure
wasn't
people
the whole
don't care
mechanic,
about it anymore.
Wasn't this whole mechanic kind of ganked off of another game?
It's Palladium, and I forget what their system is. But don't they have a bunch of systems?
I think so, yeah. They may even be the ones that have... I've completely forgotten the name of it.
They have a ton. I think I looked it up, and they have a ton of systems. A lot of them are, like, really weird sci-fi robot ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's... They give you some campaigns to run in the core rulebook, and there's one with, like, evil Care Bearers. There's one that's, like, a farm that I think you could take in an interesting direction, but, like, all the bad guys you fight are just ascended farm animals. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, TMNT, you could kind of spin in whatever direction you wanted, but it's interesting that there was an RPG for it that predated the cartoon.
Rifts was the big Palladium one that I'd heard of before. Not that that means anything okay. to anyone, but I had to say it.
You had to look it up. Lest anyone besmirch your tabletop cred.
More my Googling cred at this point, but yes.
Yeah. But anyway.
Fuego, do you have any experiences with tabletop? And actually, before we go on, I do know that a friend of ours, Cristala, has been working on like an explicitly TF tabletop game.
Is it TF or is it just a tabletop? Is it a role-playing system?
No. It's explicitly very heavily based around TF and like
cool.
having that as a fundamental aspect of it. But I don't know the details. But yeah, Fuego, do you have any experience of like any ideas about tabletop role-playing type stuff with horny?
I definitely LARPed the shit out of a Vampire the Masquerade LARP with a lot of werewolves and TF in it. Possibly that same weekend that I wrote that story for my English teacher, I was doing that part of that weekend. Possibly.
Dude, I love the idea of a horny LARP, but I guess that's just a furry convention, right?
Yeah.
That's what we do whenever we get together.
It's funny how all that stuff just converged on fucking.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. Just the idea of like, oh, it's role-playing, and it's like all these other things. And once you strip all the other shit out, it's like, no, just tape my hands like a cow. Let's go.
But speaking of the...
Come on, there's still a lot of role-playing and storytelling going on. We tell some pretty solid stories.
Speaking of the werewolf game, though, that reminds me of what I had in the show notes of there was a time a little while ago where I was playing a game that was a mashup of like werewolf and vampire and like a couple of other of the World of Darkness systems. And after a few sessions, it kind of like... we were playing, and it got to the point where my ex-girlfriend was playing a very eager werewolf girl who was basically being like a puppy and jumping around being very excited, and I was sitting there being like, wasn't expecting this. Okay, don't know how to deal with this. Just let me just roll these dice while my legs are crossed. Thank you.
I think the worst part is that she fucking super knows about your horny too.
She does, and she did at the time. Oh my God. But I don't think she put two and two together that I was like,
That's pretty funny. Oh, you're such a precious babe. I would love to roleplay a tabletop horny with you.
Well, someday we'll organize. Someday we'll organize that as a panel somewhere.
I want horny D&D so bad. But I think maybe horny D&D is just fucking.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I know there is a
fucking the RPG.
there is a horny TF based D&D.
Oh my God!
Like Phenoxo and his crew play or have played in the past.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about.
Can I make a suggestion that we do a spin-off? Can I make a suggestion we do a spin-off podcast called The Adventure Bone?
The Adventure Bone. That's very good.
It's really good. Should we do a test episode where we play a horny D&D?
I think we totally should.
Roll for erectness.
I'm so wrecked. Critical failure. My dick fell off.
Oh no.
Roll to now fight your dick. But yeah, I guess that's something to float for the future, although I cannot promise that it would be anywhere near as good or consistent as The Adventure Zone, which is a podcast you should listen to if you don't.
We can't even put out this podcast every fucking 4 months or whatever, so let's not commit to anything else. But anyway, so that we finished our rundown of tabletop and role-playing games. I feel like we did an okay job summing up everything. We had the notes, so hopefully we didn't leave too much stuff out, but because literature is such a big category, I'm sure that we did.
Let us know.
Yeah, I mean, it would be impossible to mention every book that's horny. Like, that would never happen. We would talk forever and never get there.
That's why furry conventions exist, so you can sit down and have these discussions.
But in any case, I hope we sort of, like, had an interesting discussion about, like, here are some literature TFs and here's why it's interesting, and here's why they stood out to us, which is, I guess, what we were trying to do.
I'm making quotes at the screen,
Fascinating.
But yeah, so hopefully this was a fun listen. I'm sure people, if you want to tweet at us what your favorite TF in literature is, that would be cool. We could maybe do a roundup list next time we do a podcast of stuff people liked.
Yep. We've definitely got our next episode sort of planned. We know what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Do we? What is it? What are we going to talk about?
Gender's the next one.
Gender. Yeah. Are we going to have a special guest?
I would like to have a special guest, but the logistics of that are somewhat difficult. So I would love to try and do a call-in. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But before people tweet at us, bear in mind, we have a particular special guest in mind, so don't, like, put up your hand and be like, ooh, me. And this is a very particular one-off case. We wouldn't typically normally do special guests. That's pretty much it for this episode. So let's go ahead and sign off. I'm ABCD.
I'm Agarboda.
I'm Tyrion.
And I'm Fuego.
And keep fucking them snake babes. I don't know when it's saved into Nine Inch Nails.